Welcome to Madang Podcast. Today's special guest is Dr. Ilia Delio, who is a Franciscan Sister of Washington, D.C., and the Josephine C. Connolly Endowed Chair in Theology at Villanova University. Today, she is here to talk about her newest book, The Not Yet God, Creation, Evolution, Word for God, Panentheism, Pantheism, and so much more. Please stay tuned. With deep roots in the Christian tradition and open to engaging dialogue, William B. Ehrman's publishing company is committed to the life of the Religious Academy, to the church, and to the role of religion and culture. With a history spanning over 100 years, Ehrman publishes the finest literature in theology, biblical studies, and religious history, and popular titles in spirituality, ministry, and cultural criticism. In addition to David Gushee, authors publishing with Ehrman's include Padraig O'Tama, Amy Peeler, Matthew Bates, David Hummel, Janet Kellogg-Ray, and more. Popular themes throughout the 2024 book season include titles on evangelicalism and politics, faith deconstruction, and a supply of captivating literary nonfiction selections. Visit the all-new www.ehrmans.com to order your books today. While you're there on the website, remember to sign up for our monthly newsletter called The Logo to stay in the know regarding upcoming releases, author events, and all things Ehrmans. Homeburg Christianity's Theology Beer Camp pre-sale tickets just opened up. It is held October 17 to 19 in Denver with fabulous speakers such as Diana Butler-Bass, Brian McLaren, and Ilia Delio, and so many more. Please go to www.theologybeer.camp to register today before prices go up. Homebrew Christianity's God After Deconstruction's 10 30-minute videos looking at the top reasons people report for deconstructing their faith are now all available. In spring, there will be some live streams where both Tom and Tripp answer questions about God after a deconstruction. It is an easy resource for people to be used by themselves or in small groups. Go to www.godafterdeconstruction.com. This episode of Madang Podcast is sponsored by Orbis Books, Marinol, New York, a world of books that matter. Orbis Books is offering 30% off the list price of Sister Ilia's most recent book, The Not Yet God. When you purchase on orbisbooks.com using promotion code MAD, that is M-A-D, please go to www.orbisbooks.com to order your book today.
For sponsorship inquiries, please email madangpodcast.gmail.com. This is Madang, an outdoor living room for guests to share their experiences and their work. I invite you to come in and stay for a while.
Welcome to Madang Podcast. Today's special guest is Dr. Ilia Delio. She's a Franciscan sister of Washington, D.C., an American theologian specializing in the area of science and religion, with interests in evolution, physics, and neuroscience, and the import of these for theology. She currently holds the Josephine C. Connolly Endowed Chair in Theology at Villanova University, and is the author of 20 books, including Care for Creation, which won two Catholic Press Book Awards in 2009. Ilia holds two honorary doctorates, one from St. Francis University in 2015 and one from Sacred Heart University in 2020. Today, she is here to talk about her newest book, The Not Yet God. Shirley D. Kling says, if you're seeking faith in the future or a unitive vision that will revitalize our understanding of the participatory interbecoming of God, humans, and world, this book is a must read. So Ilia, thank you so much for coming on Madang. I know you're like super busy.
Thanks so much, Grace. It's great to be with you. Just happy to share some ideas and insights.
Well, thank you so much. I got to meet you in person last year at the Southern Lights Conference. Yeah, you were so amazing. I wish I could just put that lecture just into my podcast because you blew me away. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Your talk just blew me away.
Oh, gosh. I have no idea. You know, I just do what I do.
Oh,
it was just bringing. Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad to hear. Yeah, I just want us to be, you know, just kind of wake up to the universe we actually live in, you know, which is really an amazing place. Life is amazing. Really, it's truly wondrous.
Yeah, it really is. And you bring that into all your work. And before we get into your book, The Amazing, The Not Yet God, I love the cover and I love the title. Tell us about, you started the Center for Crystal Genesis. So I find it really interesting. So if you can tell our listeners what it is about and how you started it and what it continues to do.
Yeah, thanks, Grace. Well, you know, I was originally trained as a scientist, so I've always had a love of science. And then I was asked to study theology by my religious community. And I thought, wow, that sounds really boring, but, you know, we'll give it a try. So I came to love theology as well. And my first teaching job was in science and religion. And then I wrote my area actually of theology was medieval. So I wrote my dissertation on Bonaventure, a Franciscan theologian. And he had a very dynamic understanding of Christ as the heart of creation, you know, as the center of creation. And in my dissertation, I used a little bit of the Christ mysticism of the Jesuit scholar Teilhard de Chardin. And I was really intrigued by Teilhard because he himself, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, was a Jesuit. He was a scientist. He was a paleontologist. He was a very good scientist. That was his day job, actually. But he knew something else was going on, you know, as he began to study the origins of the human person, human evolution. And he said, you know, there's something here that just eludes scientific materialism. And he began to put together, you know, his Christian faith, like faith in a God who becomes incarnate, like and fleshed, you know, and this kind of and fleshed God in this energy of love, you know, being the Christ, being formed in evolution. He put these ideas together and he said, evolution's not just a random happening, like, and by the way, evolution is truly our narrative, you know, it's not a theory, it's not like maybe we don't come by from evolution, it just is what science tells us, and all of our science is based on it. So we come by from evolution. Evolution always begins small and keeps growing. And Teilhard saw that kind of growth as a parallel to what he called maybe the body of Christ in evolution. You know, like something's going on here, basically. Something that's more than just like rocks coming together or, you know, little blood cells coming together. There's something that's more than, you know, what meets the eye. And so this notion of Christogenesis is, we might say, the love of God incarnate, materialized, you know, enfolded in the stuff of life and becoming more conscious, more life, more personalized. And that's what we mean by Christ, the birthing of Christ, the genesis of the Christ is what Teilhard called Christogenesis. So it means that this universe that we live in, it's not blind and random. It has purpose. It has aim. We're going somewhere. You know, that's what we believe. I mean, Christians believe that too, but not really sure where we think we're going. So that's might be a little different here. So we don't want to leave the world. We want to embrace it because it is what's being formed, you know, and God is part and parcel of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. You know, when you were talking about evolution, you know, I grew up in a very conservative Christian household. It was ultra conservative. I don't know if there's another word to say it, but it was the belief, you know, creation and whatever, six physical days, and the earth is only 6,000 something years old. So evolution was always like an evil word. So what do you say for things like that? Because, you know, many of us have gone beyond that, but I know so many who are still stuck there, and you know, students I talk to are stuck there too. So what do you say to people?
Wow, welcome to the universe, you know, like, I'm glad you could arrive. Honestly, Grace, I grew up to very traditional Catholicism, you know, and we were told that we humans have souls, that immortal souls created, you know, directly by God, and we were not descendants from monkeys. You know, evolution is not true for the human. It might be for animals, but not for us. And, you know, we kind of bought into this stuff. And I always wondered, like, what does that mean? Like, so how did we get here? I mean, are we just like from the stork or what? You know, where God was like a magician and just abracadabra pulled us out of like thin air? I mean, it kind of doesn't make sense. And it's kind of a shame because God gave us minds to know. Like, isn't that really wonderful that we can study? You know, we can actually discover you know, how life forms. That's pretty remarkable. So I don't want to make God into something God is not. And that's like a magician, kind of a Zeus figure. And nor do I think that we're all that special, quite honestly. We might have immortal souls, but we're kind of a wreck to creation, you know, to the rest of ecology.
Yeah, that's so very true.
We've got to get out of this. We're really special people. You know, we are. Right now, we're the highest, most complex, self-thinking type of species that we are. So it's okay to say we're a species. God is perfectly okay with that. You know, God's like, yeah, that's what you are. You're a species. you know, so we're a wise species, right? A Homo sapiens species. So I try to tell evolution like a story. I think the science does scare us. Darwin definitely scares a lot of religious people. You know, it looked like he ditched religion. Like, who needs religion now when we have science, which is always the big thing. Like, now we can really do it ourselves. It's like Jell-O, you know, just add water and just add your microscope. But now we realize, wow, this is more like, you know, a waking up story. Like, you know, the universe kind of wakes up about 13.8 billion years ago. And then here on Earth, we started getting out of bed around 4.2 billion years ago. So that's an extremely, I think we really need to appreciate how the long expanse of life, you know, that's what's so, like, this is a God who has all the time in the world, really, just like infinite patience, infinite time, like, forget about time, you know, as far as God's concerned, is like, whatever, you know, take as long as you want, take 4.2 billion years, you know, to form. And so what's so remarkable is that this long span of time, and then, you know, stars formed, planets formed, even our own Earth. I mean, how did we get here? It's pretty remarkable, you know, might've been like an asteroid collision, some kind of rock debris in a cosmic collision, but here we are out of the smallest of elements. And that's what's so beautiful about life. It's the simplicity of elements that gives rise to the complexity of life. And that's just, you know, it's just remarkable. So I like to think of God as a tremendous artist, you know. This is a God who really, not like a planner. I mean, we're not like a Ouija board and God's like, you know, let's see what we can do here. I think God just that power of love, you know. And I just think, yeah, we have made God way too much like an engineer, like a Legos, you know, constructor. But God is nothing. Like, that's just so, that makes God one big one of us. And that is what God is at all. I think Taylor put it like, kind of like this way. God is love, period. You know, that's what John tells us. God is love. So that's what God is, love. And love always is unitive. Love always pulls together, you know, and in pulling together, it creates something new. People get married, they have children, they raise families, you know, and that's what God is. God is ever newness and love, pulling together, uniting, drawing us onward to new life. And God is always that future fullness of life. as that absolute wholeness and love. And so our job is to stop making God into like a big one of us and then figuring that God planned it this way, but the plans got messed up. Like here we are, because love is the heart of the universe. And that's what Teilhard said. He said the physical structure of the universe is love. Like, no matter what you might try to do, you will not get rid of love, like this core energy of unitive life. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I can listen to you all day talking about God. That's so exciting for me. You know, watching you on stage at that Southern Lights conference, same feeling I'm getting across the screen. So thank you for sharing that. In your Center for Crystal Genesis, you also have a podcast called Hunger for Wholeness. Did you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Yeah, we started this Hunger for Wholeness podcast because, you know, coming from the Catholic tradition, the word Catholic or Catholicity originally meant having a consciousness of the whole or a wholeness. Like, it was actually coined by the Greeks who were not Catholic or followed the Pope or anything. You know, they just had a sense of this great expansive wholeness, you know, being one with the stars and the movement of the heavens. And so I think in our own time, for a whole host of reasons, we've lost our center of wholeness. We've lost sort of the axial point within us, you know, and we're desperately seeking for wholeness. I mean, whole foods, holistic health, you know, right? Everything's wholeness. Yeah, we're like a wholeness craze because we want to be whole. We feel like we're fragmented. You know, we feel like we're little fragments in search of that wholeness or unified self. And so our podcast really, it's really kind of centered around thinkers and writers who help us in their own works to come to deeper insights on wholeness. So we were grateful to have you on our podcast. We've had different scientists. We have Rupert Sheldrake. We had Richard Rohr. You know, just a number of really interesting people.
Yeah, and I was really honored to be on your podcast.
Oh, super. Yeah, it was great to have you. And, you know, we're really interested to hear how people, not just Westerners, but, you know, everyone on this planet searching for wholeness. You don't have to be North America. We're frenetic about it. But I think there are other cultures, you know, that are better at, you know, this kind of holistic life. And I wish we would pay more attention to them and thinking that the West has all the answers to everything. You know, we know that is not true. So, yeah, we're trying to diversify. We had a Hindu a Swami, I forget his last name because it's very long. So, but Swami was super, you know, a Hindu perspective, really interested in Buddhist perspectives, really interested in Asian perspectives, really interested in African perspectives. Ubuntu is such an incredibly rich concept for African culture. It just kills me that we have not paid any attention to it. What is wrong with us? Anyway, so that's what our Hunger for Wholeness podcast does. Try to like, hello, there are other wonderful people there around the world seeking, you know, not only have they seeking wholeness, but they actually are finding it in their own cultures. So
yeah. Much so thank you. Yeah, thank you that, you know, you have the Center for Crystal Genesis and you have the podcast there, Hunger for Wholeness. You're so busy speaking and writing everywhere. So I'm so grateful that you're here on Madame Podcast today. Sure. So my first question about the book, because I just find it really fascinating, and I don't really ask people this question, but I wanted to ask you how did you start writing this book? What was the moment that you thought you're going to write a book? Because for me, I don't get a spark like that, but it felt like maybe you did. So I just wanted to ask you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I am deeply interested in the question of God. And I just read too many things like we actually know what God is. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. not at all. So I want to step back from thinking that we have all the answers to God to the question of what is God? And I was influenced actually by my colleague John Haught's book, God After Einstein. And I think Jack Haught did a fabulous job of showing how by changing our understanding of space and time, which we don't factor into usually in our theologies, but, you know, space and time, are being influential in coming to a new understanding of God, because matter itself, you know, is something that's coming into existence all the time. And so the way, Einstein's theory of general relativity, the way quantum physics have really given us a radically new understanding of the basic stuff of life, like not just humans, I mean, space, time, matter itself. The whole thing is so radically changed. I can't imagine that we would not rethink our theology. I really worry that we're doing theology sometimes based on old concepts of space and time and just old cosmologies, old philosophies, just a lot of old dead people, you know, that really, they did very well when they were alive, but we've just moved to a whole different level of understanding things, and that must include God as well.
We're so funny because you're always dead right on about, you know, and we got to stop reading the dead white old men. That's what we got to stop doing.
Yeah, I didn't throw that one in, but that is true. But not only they
I throw it in all the time. But I think you are so right. I always joke about we got to stop reading about the dead white men, but I think you're right on about the old ways of thinking, because that we still continue to do, and you address it in your book. It's quite interesting that you have a warning in the book, and it says, you know, this book may be hazardous to the stability of your soul. It might cause undue anxiety or outburst of emotion. Did you put it in, or did the editor tell you to put it in?
I did. It was like a smoking label, you know, like if you read this, you can be sure to be disturbed. This is not meant to make you happy and, you know, pacify you and think that, you know, God is a bunch of daisies and flowers and life is a rainbow. You know, I want people to wake up a little bit. I want us to be disturbed. We should be disturbed. I mean, look at our world. Seriously. How can we just like say, oh, yeah, I believe in God, you know, God's in control. All right, well, you might want to think that again, you know, because it's not looking too good out there. I'm teaching a course on ecology right now, you know, and the numbers are just, you know, it's scary for young people. It's scary for old people too, but, you know, if you're younger, just meant you have that much, you know, more years ahead of you. So, and you know, we know the global warming issue, but then we have all sorts of, we can't even get along with one another anymore. We can't have a civil conversation anymore if you have two different views on things. God forbid, you know. I mean, it's an all, I won't use the word of violence, but it's, you know, major conflict. So I want to say, how can we possibly, you know, keep going on and on, you know, saying the Nicene Creed or whatever creed we say and say, I believe in God and have a world like this? There's something deeply off. And I think it's in us. I think we're the problem, you know. So basically, God's not the problem, by the way. Yeah.
I'm glad you put the warning. I never have a warning, but one of my forthcoming books, the publisher told me to put a little warning on a certain chapter. So I thought maybe Orbis books told you to put the warning.
It is pretty funny. I put it right up front, just like your smoking label, right? And if you plan to do this, you know, just so that, you know, your health will be changed. Yeah.
And it's not light reading. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to sit here and just finish the book. It's like densely packed. So I'm glad you put the warning there. In the book, you also talk about we are in a major God shift. The old God, you know, you kind of mentioned it, of the starry heavens, the sky God has been falling since the early 20th century. And, you know, you're teaching that ecology course. I'm teaching an ecotheology course right now too. So, like, what is this major God shift?
Yeah, honestly, you know, Grace, I actually think the major God shift, you know, if I go back to Christianity, I honestly wonder if we just messed it up pretty early on, like around 325 AD, you know, with Constantine and the politicization of religion and power struggles and patriarchy. But, you know, so Jesus comes along, right? You know, he's Jewish. But they're like, well, wait a minute, there's something going on in this guy that's like, seems like what we read about in the Old Testament, but he seems to be living it out, you know? So, I mean, right then and there, you know, we have to say something took a turn. You know, if you want to talk about mutations, like, you know, we talk about genetic mutations. Well, this was like a religious mutation. This was like a, you know, something. This was a God mutation. And it was like the monotheism of Judaism was become, you know, just kind of turning here. Like Jesus is like the reign of God is now, you know, and people are like, wait, what now? Really? Aren't we just, you know, waiting for that? You know, and then aren't you, you know, are you the Christ? You're the, what, really? Really? Seriously, what did you have for breakfast here? I mean, so it was so radical. This is what I think. So that's number one, the radicality of Christianity. Second is like, well, get rid of the temple, you know, don't hold on to it. Like, I'll rebuild, we're going to rebuild that in 3 days. And they're like, this guy's really out of his mind, you know. So Christianity is basically, you really have to be out of your mind to be following this. But then he's also saying, like, rebuild it. And that's where I do think Christianity is really about the godness of the human person. And, you know, where's the new temple? It's the human person, right? The temple of the Holy Spirit. Like, where does that spirit dwell? Not in a gold, you know, tabernacle, all nice 14 karat gold. It's in the human person. Wow. So I think the whole thing at church got really kind of sidetracked too. And then it's like, you know, like Athanasius said, well, God became human so that humans could become God. And it was like, what? You know, we're going to become God? No, I don't think so. That's not possible, right? Because that's what we get all Greek philosophy saying, no, God is like, you know, divine substance, divine essence. No way you're going to touch God. You know, nor way does God really get in touch with us. You know, some kind of mediator thing going on here. So that's where Carl Jung says, wait a minute, you know, this is wrong. I mean, this process of religion is actually natural to what we're about. Like, and that's where I think the revolution is. I think Christianity ushered in proleptically, you know, in anticipation of Carl Jung, you know, like become fully human and you will become like God, you know, and it's like, what more could you want? And that's, I think, what the mystery of Christ is about, you know, and nothing more. Like, we've made it into elaborate stories that have just been really good for movies, you know, but not so good for the rest of the earth. So that's basically what I'm saying is that our cosmology has radically shifted. Our philosophy really must shift accordingly. And therefore, so too must our metaphysics. And so God is like, maybe like nothing like we've thought about in the past. And maybe we just have to rethink God entirely. Certainly, even in light of your own work, you know, I mean, the patriarchy has all but killed us, and we still have it. We can't get out of it. It's so, you know, kind of sad. And yet I think Jesus was the deep patriarchalizing of, you know, monotheism. And, you know, he was more mother and sister and brother and than anything else. So, yeah, that's what I'm trying to say is, we're not at the end of Christianity. It's just being born. And I think 20th century science is helping us to awaken to a whole revitalization of the radicality and the revolutionary dimensions of this Christian religion.
Wow, that's all amazing. And then that actually leads into the second one. I love this sentence that you have. You said, a woman theologian espousing a new theology is bound to be suspect. And I couldn't agree with you more. Right there, I was like, yeah, I, you know, because you and I, women theologians, you in Catholicism, me in Protestantism, but still the patriarchy is there. And then you write, yet God speaks in many and various ways. And today, God is speaking loudly through woman. So please pay attention. Yeah, so can you say a bit more? Because I could not agree with you more than that. I just like, we have pushed woman aside for the last 2,000 years, and we can't keep silent anymore.
Totally, Grace. I mean, look, we're still living with Aristotle. You know, we're just, you know, as far as the culture, you know, patriarchal culture, we're incomplete images of the image of God with incomplete intellects. Now, there are a lot of women who have done amazing things, written amazing books, and, you know, shown themselves to be very, very smart people. And I think we are making progress slowly but surely. I think certainly the younger generations are much more attuned to this. But there is still, by and large, certainly within our institutions, the hangar, you know, that kind of dome of patriarchy. And, you know, on an official level, I do think, you know, I think the Catholic Church, for example, you know, it's like, wow, we invited women to the synod. It's like, whoa, that is really super, you know, not that we're going to listen to anything really of substance that they have to say, but at least they're sitting in the same chairs next to us. Honestly, really, this, I mean, we're in an age where artificial intelligence is actually remaking our species, where gendering is just become so now, you know, it's like, yes. And in terms of religion, it still has this male aura, like, you know, it's got to be sharply intellectual, logically consistent. It coheres with the tradition. Can a woman really adequately, you know, articulate such a theology? And my answer is, get a life, you know, or take a break. Seriously, you know, I've never bought into the patriarchy thing. The more I grew, the more I actually woke up to it for years. I mean, I lived in the male church, and you know, I was kind of brain dead to it. It was just the way life was. I came from an Italian American family. It's like, yes, father knows best. I'm like, no, he doesn't. And the guy is like, yeah, he definitely can't preach a thing, you know. So, you know, the fact that like women are, you know, even this current equal, seriously, we have to actually use that word, that we're equal. No, I don't think so. I think we are all part of humanity, end of story. And we're part and parcel of what we're becoming together. I don't think we have to parse ourselves out and just kind of prove ourselves, you know, that we actually have a brain with two hemispheres that might function at the same time. I find that the male thing is still pretty dominant in Catholic circles, you know, a little bit in the academy, you know, and I have no time for it, honestly. I mean, I used to get upset by it. Now I just roll my eyes and just yawn and just wonder, how long are they going to keep speaking, and when will they stop? Yeah, I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about. Like, yeah, no, you really don't have an idea what you're talking about.
I need to do what you're doing, because sometimes I take it too personally, because, you know, people say stuff like that to me and it bothers me, but, you know, but I got to learn to roll my eyes like you and then just brush it off.
You do. You know, my mother used to have a saying. She was from Sicily, and she was like the woman of pithy sayings. One was, little people act big and big people act little, you know, and a lot of maleness is a lot of low ego. You know, it's a lot of like, I've got to blow myself up to make people realize that I really am intelligent. And it's like, you don't have to do that. Like the best, I have always found the best scholars, male or female, say very little about themselves. They just have wonderful ideas. They're willing to share those ideas. They're very humble. They're 2 feet on the ground people, and they really want to advance knowledge, end of story. And they're happy to be working at this together. Like I found a lot of people with very fragile egos, the need to show that they're intelligent, like, you know, like quoting things in Latin or French or simultaneously Latin and French, you know? It's like, Whoa, you know, that's super. I have no idea what you're talking about, but who cares, really? I think this age of having to prove yourself in academia, it's got to end, you know. This is just a waste of time. The world is in need,
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, a real thought and passionate thought, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, you are so funny, and you are right to the point. So I'm just grateful for everything that you've written in the book and what you're saying on the podcast right now. So the book is all about God, and you write that Hebrews did not coin the word God. So if you want to say a little bit about that, because I think many in the church, that's how we feel.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I mean, they're an ancient tribe, but I think Raman Panikkar, you know, traces that word back even further to the Sanskrit language, where he says, you know, God was the name of a divinity or light, like God as what was a word for light or illumination. I thought that was really interesting because there have been recent scientific studies to show a resonance or correlation between consciousness and light. And therefore, I think, you know, God is sort of, we come into that word with, you might say, the evolution of consciousness. As we move from an awareness of, say, spirits in nature, you know, from more animistic types of spiritualities, towards maybe a level of consciousness that comes into a greater sense of self and otherness, and that other becomes then this emergence of a light, a new light, you know, that's radiating now, not only within me, but I see that light, you know, throughout creation. So I do think God is an emergent, how would I say this? Religion is an emergent phenomenon of evolution. It doesn't just appear, it doesn't drop down from the heavenly dews, you know. It wasn't a bunch of angels who got together and, like, you know, spray dusted religion. It's an emergent phenomenon of human evolution. And God is the name of this power of love, of wholeness, of life. It's a name that connotes the infinite horizon. Like we can only think so far about these things, and God is the moreness of that thinking.
If we can think that way more, I think we will have less problems, because we think of God as this almighty king and lord and, I don't know, emperor
Male,
and all that, with,
elderly grandfather, Lord, you know, like the Godfather, you know.
I think if
One
we,
who's,
yeah, go ahead.
yeah, the one who's sort of ruling over, you know, God's like a monarch, like a king. And usually, I mean, who has an elderly grandmother image for God, right? No one. It's always the elderly grandfatherly figure. I mean, or who has, that's why I remember that book. It came out a few years ago. Anyway. Where he pictures God, you know, as a mother, the Holy Spirit is a woman. And yeah, I mean, we never picture God as a woman, or never image God in any other way that elderly male with long white hair and white, you know,
Wait.
of course. What else? You know? God
Yeah.
forbid. God should be black or Asian or
Yeah.
Korean.
Or a woman, a black woman or a Korean woman,
Yeah,
yeah.
right, you know. So all these images have been wired into our brains, literally. I mean, medieval art, Western medieval art, has really wired us to think that God is really this. And if you were to, anyway, try to dispel it, deconstruct it, or whatever, I mean, it's the fires of hell are just waiting there for you, you know, if you try to do anything to this image. And I'm like, it's an image, you know, it's not a very good image either. You know, it's like pretty bad. So I'm sure God must be like, what is wrong with these people? They are just really messed up.
I was saying, listen to Ilya Delio. You gotta stop listening to all the men.
Yes. I mean, you know, I don't want to lump all men, because there's some really good men, you know, but there's some really good women too. And there's some good trans women, and there's some really good, you know, LGBTQ plus women and men and women, men, whatever people are. Why do we have to keep labeling? Like, this is the thing with God. The more we keep labeling God as a male, you know, we can't get out of that gendering problem. So, like, God is love. God is compassion. God is that wholeness of life. And then you can be whatever you're really called to be in relation to that God, right? You know, without having to fit any form.
Yeah. So earlier you went to the problem with 325. I thought you were going to go right to the beginning, because for me, it's always like this dualism that's so problematic within Christianity. And that's why it's so hard for us to get over the trans and all these LGBTQ issues and et cetera.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you. That's such an exciting discussion. Your book does talk a lot about creation and about Genesis, you know, the words used in Hebrew, which I find so fascinating because it really helps us to understand. And you say that creation exists because God exists, and God exists because creation exists. So I don't know if you want to say a bit more, because that's all tied into this, your notion of God and creation and us and evolution. I find it so fascinating.
Yeah, thanks. Well, you know, first of all, I do think the Old Testament, even though poor God is really portrayed as some old cranky guy who really has a lot of bad hair days, but I think the Old Testament is really beautiful in that deep relationship of God, you know, with creation. And so actually my thoughts on God and creation really come out of Genesis 1. There's a unity there right from the beginning. So even in terms of evolution, we came into this consciousness of a unified relationship between what we are, power of creativity, you know, at the heart of this life. And the fact is we cannot conceive of God apart from creation, you know, which we do. You know, we always think that God has this separate life apart from us. But I'm like, how could you possibly conceive that, since you're the ones who are articulating that life? So there's something about God that is inextricable from creation. You can't separate these things. So I call it the hard problem of God. We don't know what God is like. We don't know God's inner life. Because the only inner life of God is the life that we construct, you know, it's the one that we're imagining or kind of devising. So I think, you know, where there's creation, there is a need to account for the wholeness, the unity of that creation, which the word God as a deep personal source of unity. And I do like the word God. I had this conversation recently, like, do we have, you know, because of the gendering question, right? You know, do we have to keep the word God? And there's something deeply personal. We like personal names, right? If I just called you book, you know, since you're sitting behind books, you know, or called you shelf because you're sitting in front of a bookshelf, what does that do for us? So there's something about the name that personalizes the existence of that relatedness. And so I think that's what God does for me anyway. And what I'm saying is there is a power of a named power of life at the heart of life. And I can't get rid of, I mean, even if I say, I don't want to believe in that name or that God or anything, but I still know that I don't hold this life together. You know, believe me, if you live my life, you'd know it's all over the place. So there's something here that's so bound and unified and inextricable. And that's, I think, what the Old Testament, you know, I am with you always until, you know, well, that's Jesus. But, you know, the Old Testament kind of gives that same testimony that, you know, wherever you go, I shall go, you know, and whatever you do, I am with you. And that I am with you, I think that's that power of God, you know, that unified personal presence of love. No matter where we go, what we do, what we become, what we throw out, God is there for us and with us. And that is a wonderful, you know, way to look at this emergent wholeness of life.
That's so beautiful. And earlier you talked about wholeness, and in the book you coined a term, which I find so beautiful and helpful. And I think I'm going to be able to use it someplace too. You coined the term theology. Am I saying
theology.
It right?
Yes, theology.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so tell the listeners what you mean by this term, and because I find it so useful.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I took the term holon, which is a term that has emerged with systems biology. that there are no independent parts. There are holes within holes within holes. So a holon is a part that's part of a larger whole. And therefore, I think when we talk about God in creation or God in our lives, that's what I mean. I think we can't extricate these, you know, realities that God is the whole and we're part of God's wholeness and God is part of our wholeness. We're holes within holes. And how would we develop a theology of wholeness? That's basically what it is. So that we are begin to talk, that's why I'm trying to shift our categories from kind of, you know, getting out of a metaphysics of substance or metaphysics of essence or God. God is that prime mover and we're secondary to God and this kind of theology of participation, you know, that God is the supreme creator and we participate. And I'm like, well, I think it's different. I think it's much more of a mutual relatedness where the wholeness of what I am is entangled with the wholeness of God. And the wholeness of God is really entangled with the wholeness of what I am and what I'm becoming in my relatedness throughout this creation. So I take theology as the starting point to rethink theology in terms of wholeness, emergence, evolution, and becoming. You know, what are we becoming as we move through into, you know, the unfolding of complexity and consciousness, which is what evolution's about. So yeah, the whole within the whole.
Yeah, that's so helpful because I think that will really help us, you know, because we have used God to destroy each other. You know, we've done so much in the name of God to go into war and do everything destructive, this climate change that's happening. So I find that so helpful. So thank you. I just, you know, I really recommend your book.
Oh, thank you, Grace. And the other thing is, you know, like the many people who have ditched that kind of patriarchal warring God, you know, that's not helpful either because we need, you know, I'd like to kind of revive God, you know, I want God to come back as a living God, life itself. And that, you know, I think one way to think about God is life itself, the wholeness of life. I love that, you know, that saying from John, I have come that you might have life and have it to the full, to the full. And I think to myself, my God, we're barely holding on, you know, you know, what would life to the full look like? You know, and I'm sure some will say, well, it's not meant to be here on earth, but I'm saying, well, why not? You know, at least it can, I don't think terrestrial life is going to last for billions and billions of years into the future, but I do think we will merge with other planets of life. So what would the fullness of life look, you know, in this cosmic scale of life, where God is this ever entwining energy of love, you know, in it. We think too small about God. We've shrunk God to our size. And then we set up that God in opposition to other gods, you know, your God's not my God, my God's not your God, so I'm going to fight you. And then we kill ourselves. And in doing that, we destroy the earth. So what kind of religion is that? Who would want that religion anyway? That's just a mess, if you ask me.
It is a mess, but some people really love that. And it boggles my mind and it boggles your mind too. But there are people who really...
I wonder, Grace, if they love it because they're deeply fearful that if they were to give that up, what would happen? You know, and I think this is where we have to really, this is faith, right? It's not just faith seeking understanding. I think love, where there's faith in a God who is love, where there is love, there's no fear because you trust. Mm-hmm. And I think what's called today, we're called into a God of trust, a God of hope, a God of future, a God of life, a God who loves diversity and loves new ideas and loves imagination. I mean, we have just shrunk everything and we're killing ourselves in the meantime. So wake up and get on board with a God who is really dying to live.
Well, you have, you know, your book is so deep and there's so many concepts in there. One that I really want you to share, you know, before we wrap up is Because we're dealing with this climate change issue, this climate crisis, you deal a lot with pantheism and panentheism and these terms, and you bring in the science, and some of it's too deep for me to comprehend because my mind is, you know, I used to love science, but then theology told me, oh, get away from science. But you are now telling me I have to go back to science. But anyway, just tell us more about these wide concepts and terms that are so helpful for us
yes.
in our theological journey. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, classical theism does hold an ontological distinction. In other words, God is divine being, we're created being, and there's no way we'll ever be divine being. So, you know, that holds that kind of distinction between God and creation. And, you know, I can understand that to some extent. We're participating in God. I get it. Panentheism wants to take that one step further and say, but God is in all things. That's an incarnational statement. And all things are in God. But I think panentheism does still hold to, in some ways, ontological distinctions. I mean, it's the in part, you know, it's sort of like God is in us, we are in God, but God is not us and we are not God. And I want to just challenge that. I want to say, okay, let's take that one step further and bring that in conversation with quantum physics, where quantum physics cannot really distinguish between the entities that are entangled with each other. And I haven't really worked this out, you know, in a systematic way, but I do think taking quantum physics as the starting point for talking about a God-world relationship puts us in a whole different field, literally, of relatedness with God, so that we cannot readily separate God and what we are. That in that sense, I want to say that God is the root or the I don't want to use Tillich's language of ground, but I do use it to some extent. God is the ground or the root or the wave dimension of the particularity of existence. And so I want to opt for some type of pantheism. Now, I'm not just doing that on my own. Teilhard de Chardin actually wrote a chapter on pantheism and Christianity. It's in his Essays on Christianity and Evolution. And everybody's like, oh, no. Teilhard was a panentheist. And I'm like, oh, no. Actually, he advocated for Christian pantheism. And that's what I think we need to understand better. Christian pantheism. He does say that there are types of pantheism, like Spinoza types, that, you know, that are, they conflate. In other words, everything's collapsed together. And so God is everything from your coffee cup to your TV screen. And there's no hope in that, honestly. You know, if everything is God and you look at the world, you go, really, this is really a mess. But Christian pantheism is the unitive differentiation of God and us in a union of love. And so for Teilhard, Christian pantheism really says God is not just at the heart of things. God is that thing. God is the leaf, you know, God is the material stuff. And that gets us really worried. And we're saying that, you know, but God cannot be collapsed or conflated with that material stuff. And that's Teilhard's whole thing, that God actually becomes God more as that material stuff begins to unify and grow in consciousness. And so he has a whole way of working this out, that love and awareness actually begin to differentiate God and creation, but it's actually through the pantheism of materiality, material pantheism. So I will work that out better for my next book, my next round of books.
I can't wait. I can't wait for that one.
All I'm saying is we do not have any sense of God at the heart of creation, no operative sense whatsoever. I mean, recycling and, you know, I mean, you look at our amount of garbage and consumption and stuff. We have a godless, consumptive world. You got to admit it, you know, and it's because we've been trained to think of God up there. You know, we're down here and creation is just useful for us. And I'm saying, this is nix so good, as the Germans would say.
You know? So before we go, I want you to say about the title of the book, because you do discuss it, The Not Yet God. So if you can say, say something about what that means.
Yeah.
Not yet
God. Right. So actually, the title does come from John Haught's book, God After Darwin, where he says, the unfolding of space-time, in other words, that consciousness is rising, means that God is not yet come into the fullness of all that God can be. And Teilhard actually says the same thing in his own writings. We don't start with God. We start with our experience of wholeness and this kind of material, the sense of life itself is, you know, the dynamism of life and what's going on in the dynamic wholeness of life. And as we become aware of that dynamism, we begin to realize that, you know, what we read in scripture is that God is this kind of, even the Old Testament to the New Testament is an emergence of God. God is revealing God's self. God is slowly disclosing God's self. And that's the same thing here. God is rising up in and through conscious awareness. So God is not over, old, and done. God is becoming God and the fullness of God. And of course, that not yet God then becomes the mystery of Christ, because what God is and what we are called into become unified in that mystery of incarnation. And I think we have yet to really understand what that mystery holds for us personally as humans, and then for the whole of created earth life and then cosmic life. So the not yet God is, don't think you have all the answers to God. You have the questions and live into the questions, because God is becoming something in and through us.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much, Ilya Delio. It's like, I can talk to you all day long, but I know you're probably going to start your other book now. So, but thank you so much. It was such a delight to have you on Madame Podcast. The book is Not Yet God. I hope everyone goes out to buy it. I think people can read it in churches and, you know, together as a study group or in seminary setting or in college. I think it's such an important book. It's really an eye-opener. And today we just touched the tip of the iceberg with you. So thank you so much and taking time out of your busy schedule to be on Madame Podcast.
Thank you, Grace. I really appreciate it.
With deep roots in the Christian tradition and open to engaging dialogue, William B. Ehrman's publishing company is committed to the life of the Religious Academy, to the church, and to the role of religion and culture. With a history spanning over 100 years, Ehrman publishes the finest literature in theology, biblical studies, and religious history, and popular titles in spirituality, ministry, and cultural criticism. In addition to David Gushee, authors publishing with Ehrman's include Padraig O'Tama, Amy Peeler, Matthew Bates, David Hummel, Janet Kellogg-Ray, and more. Popular themes throughout the 2024 book season include titles on evangelicalism and politics, faith deconstruction, and a supply of captivating literary nonfiction selections. Visit the all-new www.erdmans.com to order your books today. While you're there on the website, remember to sign up for our monthly newsletter called The Logo to stay in the know regarding upcoming releases, author events, and all things Erdmans. Homeburg Christianity's Theology Beer Camp pre-sale tickets just opened up. It is held October 17 to 19 in Denver with fabulous speakers such as Diana Butler-Bass, Brian McLaren, and Ilya Delio, and so many more. Please go to www.theologybeer.camp to register today before prices go up. Homeburg Christianity's God After Deconstructions 10 30-minute videos looking at the top reasons people report for deconstructing their faith are now all available. In spring, there will be some live streams where both Tom and Tripp answer questions about God after deconstruction. It is an easy resource for people to be used by themselves or in small groups. Go to www.godafterdeconstruction.com. This episode of Madang Podcast is sponsored by Orbis Books, Marinol, New York, a world of books that matter. Orbis Books is offering 30% off the list price of Sister Ilya's most recent book, The Not Yet God. When you purchase on orbisbooks.com using promotion code MAD, that is M-A-D, please go to www.orbisbooks.com to order your book today.
For sponsorship inquiries, please email madangpodcast@gmail.com.